Welcome to the Bulls Show, your look at the Chicago Bulls from a fan's perspective. I'm your host, Nils. Online, we got my man, Mitch.
What's up?
We just got off the phone with Yahoo Sports' Kelly Dwyer in celebration of Scottie Pippen Week on bloggable.com.
Yeah, the website is throwing out all types of great stuff about Scottie Pippen from articles and videos. Our boy Ricky O'Donnell dropped it, started off with a great article. So I definitely encourage everybody to get old bloggable and celebrate the man, the myth, the legend, Scottie Pippen.
Yeah, so we just wanted to set you up before you start listening to the episode, since this deviates a little bit from our normal Bulls talk. But we didn't think there would be any better guest to talk all things Pippen than Kelly Dwyer, who, of course, grew up watching Pippen like the rest of us. So in a moment, you'll be tuning in to The Bull Show with Kelly Dwyer. Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter at The Bull Show, as well as at Mitch Stone. Check us out on all our affiliate sites, GoAirHipHop.com, Bloggable.com, and, of course, TheBullShow.com. Without further ado, here's Kelly Dwyer on The Bull Show. This week, our friends at Bloggable.com are celebrating Scottie Pippen with a look at the Hall of Fame career of the Bulls legend. So Mitch and I thought we'd get in on the action with a Pip-centric pod. But also joining us is writer for Yahoo Sports and editor of Ball Don't Lie, Kelly Dwyer. Kelly, thanks for taking this stroll down memory lane with us.
I lied. You know, nostalgia is a mild form of depression, so let's get to it.
Kelly, we wanted to have you on this Pip pod for basically two reasons. One...
Is that what we're calling it, the Pip Pod?
It has a nice ring to it, right? It rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, with Pip.
but the two main reasons why we wanted to have you on is, one, you're an incredibly talented writer and we're big fans of your work. But possibly more importantly, you like us, grew up watching Scotty during the dynasty years, being from the Chicagoland area.
It was quite the roller coaster there for a while, but I think it paid off.
For sure. Now I know there's a lot to choose from, but here's what I want to start off with, and this is pretty general, but can you give our listeners your fondest Scottie Pippen memory?
Oh, yeah, that's impossible. I mean, I guess the go-to is 91. You know, I don't know how old most of your listeners are, but I'm a ancient, old, doddering fool, and, you know, for a while there, the Bulls weren't champions. They were the team, they were the also-rans. They were the... you know, the next team up that always seemed to fall short. And you know, for him to bring a championship to the city after, you know, waiting for, it wasn't that long with their contenders. It was only maybe like 4 years, you know, and that's kind of pushing it. But it just seemed like it was never going to happen. So, you know, by the time 91 hit and he just basically dominated those finals on both ends of the ball and, you know, encouraged the triangle and got other people involved and just killer defensively, it was, you know, that image of Scottie Pippen and that, you know, that Road Bulls jersey, you know, speaking up and down the floor in the forum. I mean, that's got to be it for me.
Yeah, I feel like Scottie's ascension in the NBA could be used as a proxy for my childhood, or at least, you know, you could use reference points in Scottie's career to narrate my childhood, because I feel like my earliest childhood sports memory was Scottie dribbling out the clock during the final seconds of the 91 finals.
That's a pretty good memory to have because, you know, my earliest Bulls memory was watching them get swept 2 years in a row by the Celtics. So, you know, that's a nice place to start off. But, I mean, yeah, that's just, let's see, I just turned 11 when they won their first title. And, you know, when that's half of your life, you know, obsessing over this team that just never seems to get over the hump, it's a pretty huge deal. And it's, you know, you don't forget that even, you know, 7 years later when they're taking in their sixth ring. You know, that memories of 89 and 90, they just don't go away easily. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, he was the thing. He was the guy that pushed them over the top. And his career ascension sort of mirrored what the Bulls as a team were going through. It was just adding a little more every year. It's the most championship caliber.
You know, it's funny. A lot of people have talked about Scottie Pippen, and I feel like when we're in Chicago, we have a little bit of a different opinion of Scottie. We kind of understand how important he was, and him being the guy that you talked about kind of pushed Pippen over the edge. But nationally, how do you feel like Scottie Pippen's rated? Is he an overrated player? Is he, obviously, you're not going to say overrated, but is he an underrated player? Is he properly valued? What do you think about that?
It's evolving. I mean, there was a little backlash around that time that he retired and we started using like player efficiency rating, which is a fine metric in a lot of ways, and it didn't really rate him all that highly because, you know, he's not a high usage guy and he set up the offense rather than getting assists or scoring on his own. He was just more of an enabler, and, you know, stuff like PR doesn't really pick up individual defense or even, you know, help defense and shading and stuff like that. So, you know, there was a little backlash about 10 years ago. There was certainly a backlash. I mean, just as a kid in Chicago, you know, listening to the sports reporters, watching the sports reporters, listening to the sports reporters on 720 and listening to sports talk radio, that there was genuine hate for Scottie Pippen before they won that title. And in 89-90, even though this guy was a relative kid and he was coming out of a tiny school, he was, you know, people were expecting him to be this, you know, massive number two. And this guy that was just going to push the team over the top and turn into this weird sort of Dr. J Magic Johnson amalgam, and he was going too slow for everyone's taste at the time, it felt. And, you know, so by the time they won that first title, yeah, he was probably underrated. I think he'd only made one All-Star team by 91, or if that. I think he may have made it the first time in 92. And, yeah, I mean, he had to deal with quite a bit. In terms of nationally, you know, I wouldn't presume to know. I know he's disliked by a lot because he was kind of the whipping guy. Once Jordan left and the rest of the league sort of had that bolster seat, he was the guy that people could, you know, kind of mock. I ran a website during the lockout year when he joined the Rockets, and there was a real anti-Pippen backlash. He got busted up by Dirk Nowitzki in one of Nowitzki's first really good games, and you know, there was a lot of, you know, what basketball internet was back then, kind of glee at seeing, you know, one of the Bulls finally get theirs. But it's evolving, and I think we've kind of learned to appreciate the stuff that he did that didn't show up in the box score.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like Scottie Pippen, and maybe he was beyond this, he was. He's a player that kind of set off a genre of player. When you think about, like, the Draymond Greens of the world, the Leonards of the world, even the Jimmy Butler's world, these, like, giant small forwards that guard four positions but also can handle the ball. Like, I feel like he was, like, one of the innovators of that position. And now that seems to be, like, a position that everybody's dying to get, a player like that. So maybe he was beyond his time. As we start to kind of – you talked about advanced statistics. As we start to kind of look at defense and understand that defense is kind of just as important – almost as important as offense, that he's starting to get his just due.
This isn't really a new thing. People were after that 1987. I mean, there's a reason that, you know, the Bulls were lusting after him. And, you know, I was thinking about this when you guys invited me on, that back then small forwards were – they were either these, you know, huge lumbering scorers or these, you know, sort of – they were just these stocky guys who backed people down in the post and maybe hit a three-pointer. You know, no one outside of Milwaukee was handling the ball. No one was pushing the offense. And even in Scottie's rookie year, just coming off the bench, you could tell there was something there, the way he would lead a break, the way he would, you know, be the guy before the guy that makes the pass. He was just this – nobody looked like him. I mean, they're just sort of a lot of – you know, even in the 80s when no one was really bulked up back then and no one was really, you know, in a lot more finesse game, he was just this gorgeous player to watch, you know, right from the beginning. It was just this, you know, template for – you know, Jordan might be the best in the league. Magic Johnson run this league. Isaiah Thomas, you know, backs down to no man. But in terms of how you would build a basketball player, you know, there's your template. And like you said with Draymond, we're still, you know, looking for that guy, you know, all these years later.
Yep.
It's crazy because I still think Scottie doesn't get the credit he deserves. You know, we're talking about a six-time NBA champion, eight-time all-NBA defensive first team, you know, named one of the 50 greatest players in the league during the 50th anniversary of the league. Yet Scottie often gets stuck in Jordan's shadow, casted as merely a sidekick. Of course, that's to the uninformed. I mean, take a look at his recent Instagram beef with Shaq and how the sidekick label was Shaq's default insult. Ricky O'Donnell highlighted this in his piece yesterday on Bloggable. You know, not only was Scottie obviously critical to the Bulls' success, but there's a defining Scottie moment in every championship run, whether it was leading the Game 6 comeback in 92, you already talked about 91, you know, he had the two blocks on Charles Smith in 93, even just destroying Mark Jackson defensively in 98.
That hurt me because Mark Jackson's my boy. As a player, you know, fat point guards that don't shoot, I mean, that hurt my heart.
Scottie did have 1 year with the Bulls where he did get to step out of Jordan's shadow, so to speak, and be the guy, you know, while Michael was busy playing baseball. I'd say Scottie did pretty good for himself, finishing third in MVP voting and leading the Bulls to 54 wins. Kelly, what do you remember most about that season?
How they just didn't seem to miss a beat. It was just, we're going right back to this. The ball is going to move just as much. And the defense. The defense was just monstrous. There may have been better teams than Knicks. I think statistically were a better defensive team, you know, back then. But that Bulls team could defend right now. That Bulls team, you know, without Jordan, defensively could keep up with the Warriors, could keep up with whoever you have coming out of the West. They were just so, you know, just one arc moved into another and just one arm swiveled over, and it was just this fascinating thing to watch. And it was also, there's the idea that you were playing with found money. Because, you know, it was as gutting as Jordan's retirement was back then, there was always the, it's probably for a year. It's probably for a couple of years. This is going to, you know, it wasn't like when LeBron up Cleveland, it's like, why aren't they tearing it down? Why aren't they starting over? It's over for those guys. It was with Chicago, it was just kind of, let's circle the wagons a bit. Let's see what we can do with Pippen, with Kukoc, with the new additions. Let's get Stacey King out of here and bring Luke in. And, you know, eventually it came to form. But, yeah, that was one of the, it was gorgeous basketball. I hate to keep going back to that word. It was just fascinating, wonderful basketball, and just a return to frustration, because by the time, you know, the regular season had ended, it turned from being, oh, isn't this a pleasant surprise that they're basically doing as well without Jordan as they did with him the year before. Because the year before was kind of a tired year. Jordan's pretty beaten. That team may have been a little top-heavy and possibly underachieved the 93 team. But, you know, by the time they got to the playoffs, it was like, okay, clown time is kind of over, and you're a cute story, but let's kind of follow through on this. And you know, yeah, for them to fall short in that second round was just, it was brutal. It was, I walked around in a daze, you know, and for a week after that, and not because I was in junior high.
I wonder if that team would have had more time, and obviously things worked out. Jordan comes back. They win a couple more championships, but I wonder if that team could have won a championship with more time to kind of mesh and
play. I don't think so, because he just put so much of himself out there that by 95-96, he was just beat down. I mean, his body fell apart in 95-96 in ways that he never really recovered from. He had, you know, foot injuries, soft tissue injuries after the three championship years that followed. He had a dodgy back for the 3 years that followed, and he just spent so much of himself during that season and during the three initial championship seasons that, you know, as great as Tony could have been and as wonderful an addition that Rodman could have been without Jordan, I just think Scottie was, you know, he was brilliant 95-96. He was, you know, on an MVP pace before his back acted up. But no, I just think he didn't give him too much.
Who knows, that 94 series, we were a Hugh Hollins phantom call away from making the Eastern Conference Finals and possibly the Finals.
It was, yeah, I mean, it's a call that, you know, even if it's not against the Bulls, I still don't understand how it's a shooting foul on a player if the ball has already been shot.
It's a high five. That's all it is.
Yeah. The ball's out of his hands.
That was an insane series, not only for the Hugh Hollins call, but it also included the dunk over Patrick Ewing. Fair to say that was the greatest dunk of all time?
It's for Pippen, yeah, possibly, but honestly, he had so many that just weren't these awesome, amazing, you know, in-your-face highlight moments that were just, it was just, you know, if you could be born again as an NBA-level basketball player, that's who you'd want to be. Like, the one move that I'd love to be able to play, and I'm not saying this is I'm on a Scottie Pippen podcast right now, but like, is I'd love to be able to do this one, he dribble left on the left side baseline and then basically jump back into the lane going to his right, and you wouldn't even really throw it down. It would just be this sort of soft two-hand dunk, and it was just, it was sublime. It was just this perfect specimen of a basketball player matched with this insane, you know, cunning intelligence that just was perfectly suited for, you know, for this league.
Well, he's almost like a player's player, right? There was an interview with Karl Malone on the Dan Patrick Show a couple years back, and he asked him about what players he would start with, and he talked about Scottie Pippen over guys like Larry Bird or Magic Johnson. I think when you talk to players, you know, there's that great quote from Steve Kerr about saying that if he goes 1 for 9 and scored 4 points and he still dominated the game. If you kind of played the game, and obviously, you know, we never played the game and we understand his greatness, but you hear just like, I think the excitement of guys when they talk about Scottie Pippen and talk about his importance, because he has those things that kind of come outside of the box score, things aside from points and rebounds, assists, things like help defense, just making the game easier for other guys so they can focus on other things. He, obviously, as you said, he's just a prototype.
Oh, without a doubt. It's not about some like lame sort of, you can't have two alpha dogs on a team. It's not any of that stuff. It's a team sport that you got to outscore the other team. And listen, if you give me, I don't want Magic Johnson, you know, dominating the ball. I don't need to run everything through Steve Nash and John Stockton. You give me Pippen and Jordan in the backcourt, and you know, maybe a healthy Walton and Bird, and you know, and the ball's going to move, and you want that sort of all around player. You want, and it's not because he's not going to take plays off, and he's not going to, you know, back off, and he's not going to deny other people from giving their stats. It's just there wasn't anything he didn't do well.
He allows you to kind of do whatever you want to do as a basketball team. When you have a guy that can do so much, you don't have to kind of define your team. If you start your team with a guy like Jason Kidd, who I love, he's a great player, but you kind of have to do certain things to build a team around Jason Kidd, or, you know, grab shooters if you're building a team around Shaq. Pippen is just—it's like choose your own adventure. It's build the roster how you want to build it when you have a baseline player like Scottie Pippen.
You know, that's also makes for, you know, not just winning basketball, but great basketball to watch when you have this 11 billion tool athlete that just is, you know, he's not going to screw anything up, save for the odd free throw.
Now, Kelly, we got to go dark here for a second, because I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you this. Going back to that 94 Eastern Conference semifinal series, that was the same series where Scottie infamously sat out the final 1.8 seconds of Game 3. The story goes Scottie didn't like that Phil drew up the play for Tony Kukoc, and so Scottie took himself out of the game. The incident is arguably Scottie's one blemish on his Bulls resume, but looking back at it, you know, was the decision to sit out at all defensible?
It's understandable. That doesn't make it excusable. This is a guy that never got any credit for anything. When he was starting to emerge with the Bulls before they won championships, he was this gem of a player that Jerry Krause found, and it was all about Jerry Krause and the scouting. When he was winning championships, and when he got on the Dream Team, despite, you know, only being an All-Star one time ahead of a million other players, it's because he was maturing. It's because he was on TV all the time. It was never his thing, and then he finally gets the one chance of that Jordan, and then there's Tony Kukoc, who, maybe my second favorite player of all time, turned into a fantastic player, but Tony Kukoc did everything wrong that year. He screwed up plays. He was terrible defensively. He was poor in defensive rotations. He held onto the ball too long in that offense. And, you know, Pippen finally gets his Jordan-like moment, and they go away from him. And it was the right call, because I think Kukoc should have got earlier in the regular season. It was not unlike that. To win a game, but yeah, you can understand why you're 7 years in and the pressure is building up, but you know, it doesn't make it okay. And it's unfortunate that made the headlines on a Friday night in the middle of May, and what just should have been another close Knicks Bulls game. It turned into, I mean, let's think about it. What else has been as egregious and wrong as that in NBA playoffs, maybe even history? Mm-hmm. I mean, you Wilt sitting out the end of the game because he didn't like what the coach was calling. When he was in L.A., you know, you have LeBron weirdness in Cleveland a few years ago. But, I mean, nothing I don't think has been worse than sitting out the last 2 seconds of a playoff game because the ball didn't come your way.
Yeah, it's really tough to defend Scottie's decision at that point. Like you said, it's understandable. But if anything, it was just completely out of character for him because, you know, if you read up on how all of Scottie's former Bulls teammates have felt about him, and Mitch already alluded to this in how other players really viewed him as a player's player, there have been nothing but positive things to say with the exception of that incident. He's always been called one of the best teammates.
He wasn't an isolation player either. Everyone who's on that team loved him. All the ones you're talking about are players that were still on that team. Steve Kerr, who coached, you know, every one of them. They adore him. But, you know, it was the right call. You got a 6'11" guy that can basically catch the ball out of a timeout with no time and get off a 22-footer. you know, it was the right call. But and Scottie Pippen, of all people, should know that, you know, it was the right move to make. It's just, you know, these people are human.
Yeah, Kelly, I think you bring up a good point, too, about it being on such a national stage, and that kind of brought a little bit more, I guess, negative light than what it could have potentially brought. And there are other situations, I think, in history that maybe weren't in such a pivotal time where players are doing some pretty shady things. I don't know. I kind of think about the Kobe Bryant Game 7 no-shoot thing where he took two or three shots in the whole second half. I mean, there are times where players kind of do things that aren't, you know, probably the most team-oriented thing. It's just that this was one event that was so kind of in such a big stage that, not that it's overblown, but we hear a lot more about it as opposed to kind of other incidents in history, I think. I'm not sure that Scottie Pippen's the only person that's ever done something kind of weirdly selfish.
The difference being is that, and people and fans are getting another shot at Kobe, but Kobe had a history of doing that, playing the martyr in, you know, his second championship year with the Lakers. He'd done that before. Whereas, you know, this is completely unlike Pippen. And, you know, had Kukoc missed the shot and hit on the court, had Pippen gotten to take the shot and missed it, it just would have been another, it was a TNT game on a Friday night, and everyone would have moved on to the next game on NBC on Sunday. But, you know, by the time that game hit, it was national news, and rightfully so. You don't do that.
Luckily, there was no Twitter.
Yeah. One other thing about it I got to bring up is that we were just used to the Bulls being in the playoff, and there just weren't any, you know, the 24/7 thing with media, you know, had that sort of team been around by now, by January, people would be obsessed with the, look at these Bulls, look at what they're doing. I mean, if LeBron decided to walk away for a year and Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving turned into a championship caliber team, people would be, you know, raving about it, but, you know, 2.5 months before the All-Star break. And back then, it wasn't even a story even by them, even by the second round. It was just sort of ignored because I guess people expected the red and white to win 55 games every year. And it was just, you know, it wasn't until a couple of years later, and possibly when Phil Jackson's book came out, that it was accepted that this is one of the more remarkable, you know, basketball feats of the modern era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of feel like Pippen would have gotten a lot more respect nowadays. I feel like we look past the box score. But speaking of that, I don't know if you caught this, Kelly. There was a great article, I think it was by Tom Ziller, that talked about Pippen being the second greatest player of the 90s, second best player of the 90s. On your Mount Rushmore of players, great players of the 90s, does Pippen make it?
Well, again, he makes my team. If I'm starting a team, I'm putting him out. I'm letting him handle the ball. I'm not going to bother with the point guard. I'm not going to bother with the guy, you know, dominating and, you know, doing a pick and roll nonsense for a million possessions a game. I don't know where I put him with that, but you say, like, he might be more appreciated now. I'm not going to call us all a bunch of stat nerds these days, but I don't know if you would be. You'd really have to watch the game to understand that even while he is putting up 21-7-7, and, you know, a couple of steals, he is still kind of this no-stats all-star sort of guy where he can be the most pivotal player, even on offensive play, without getting an assist or without getting a bucket. So I don't know this is going to sound incredibly snobbish, but I don't know. You have to really know the game to understand what Pippen brought to us.
Well,
just the defensive stuff.
Do you think that's happening now with Draymond, though? I mean, I feel like
but
there's this...
He gets stats, though. I mean, but, yeah, I mean, we're getting better.
Yeah, I think that people are starting to understand. Like, one of the things I love is have you heard of these, like, gravity numbers where like, a player like Kyle Korver, right? Like, if you look at Kyle Korver and you're like, he's just a shooter, right? But with, the sports TV cameras, we're able to see that, like, defenders won't leave him. And that has, like, these crazy effects on an offense and on a defense. I feel like things like that, if we're getting that advanced, then maybe Scotty's more appreciated. I guess it's a hope for me, and maybe you're the bucket of cold water, but, you know, I don't know.
Well, and look, we got Marc Gasol winning Defense Player of the Year, you know, awards and joking a couple of years ago, and yeah, people are looking at it, but, you know, I just hope that we talk about how hard it is to qualify, you know, defensive metrics and all that sort of thing. I hope, like you talked about with Forber, that we are going to get better at realizing how good someone like Pippen was offensively without having to shoot a lot or without getting an assist in ways that aren't, well, at least 45% of his threes like Korver is. But it's evolving. It's going to be really interesting to see how we're still looking at Pippen when he turns, 60.
On the topic of defense, fair to say that Pippen was a better defender than Jordan?
Jordan, when he wanted to be, could be better because he got called, if we're honest. Jordan got called. Jordan could muscle out people and get, I mean, I remember game one of the 98 first round and going up against the Nets, and it's this plucky Net team, very good Net team, in the first game, and it's a close game. And Chris Gatling, who was an all-star the year before and a very good accomplished post player, was just going up against Pippen a couple sessions in a row off of switches, and Pippen just ate him alive, just destroyed him. And they're coming to the bench after Calipari calls a timeout, and Sam Cassell's on the sideline yelling at Gatling, and it definitely made all the TNT cameras. That's a bleeping small forward out there, you know, yelling at him to score on him, but he couldn't. Him and Rodman. You know, Rodman with Detroit. Rodman guarded four or five positions. Pippen could absolutely do the same. So, I mean, yeah, Jordan, when he wanted to be, you know, when he wanted to curry favor, could still shut people down. But I don't think there's ever been a more versatile defender in NBA history than Scottie Pippen.
Yeah, you're talking about versatility. It's crazy. You're talking about Chris Gatling, which I don't know, most of our listeners probably know he is, but he's a 6'10", bruising, you know, power forward. But we've also talked about, like, Scottie Pippen shutting down Mark Jackson, who was, like, the most complete opposite type of basketball player there is on the court. So to think that there's a player that's
2 weeks gone, later, too.
Huh? Yeah, exactly.
2 weeks later.
Exactly. So to think that, like, and this is not, like, later in Scottie Pippen's career when he puts on more muscle or he's, like, a different type of player. Like, that's, like, how do you value that? How do you value the ability to be able to lock down a back-to-the-basket power forward and then 2 weeks later lock down a pass-first, perimeter-oriented, you know, flashy point guard? It's that's nuts to me.
Years after guarding Magic Johnson. That's seven years later. That's a lifetime. The guy's playing 100 games a year and plays in two Olympics, and 7 years later he still has the juice, you know, to guard Mark Jackson for 94 feet.
Dude, I'm just about to go out and get a Scottie Pippen tattoo. That's it. I'm fired up. I'm fired up, and I'm ready to do it. It's going to look a lot better than the statue.
You know, I was looking up some YouTube clips in preparation for Scottie Pippen Week, and there's this one. I think it's called, like, Ultimate Defender. It's about a three-minute clip of just him literally defending positions 1 through 5. I know we're you know, almost beating a dead horse, but it bears worth repeating. You know, this is a guy who could play on the ball, deny the wings, bump in the post. You know, in this clip that I saw, and I'll have to post it, he was defending Patrick Ewing, you know, not too far off his prime, maybe still in his prime, and blocking him while Patrick Ewing tried to post him up and shoot a fadeaway over him. There's no one that I think I've seen with more defensive versatility than Scottie Pippen.
I think that, I mean, I can't remember what it's called, but the one with the Q-Tip song and him defending is probably my favorite YouTube mix ever, and it's mostly just defense. There's some dunks thrown in there, and he'll hit a, you know, three pull up a transition. But yeah, I mean, he's my YouTube guy. He's also the greatest, and I'm not talking about Mr. Stubb, I'm talking about the greatest, say, shoe company commercial I've ever liked, is him with the Thelonious Monk. And yeah, the bullet ripping through the paper, and him, and it's all defense. There's like one dunk in it, and the rest of it is just him crouching in front of the guy bringing the ball for it.
He's also great on NBA Jam. Great NBA Jam player. Underrated. He was super underrated. The Bulls were super underrated on NBA Jam. Everybody played with Utah. Everybody played with the Sonics. You know what? Pippen was great on it. Well, anyway, it's kind of crazy. We talked about how one of a kind he is, how crazy he is. And we've also talked about kind of how, you know, he's created this kind of genre of players. Who's next in, like, the Pippen school of basketball that's in the NBA now? We talked about Draymond Green, and obviously LeBron is very similar to him. Who is there anybody that's on deck that's not, like, a superstar, you know, player right now that kind of reminds you a little bit about what kind of Pippen did?
No, I don't think there is. I mean, because ball handling tips the scales. You got a guy you can throw the – I mean, look at what Minnesota trying to do with Zach LaVine. You know, look what they're trying to do with Wiggins. You know, he's – the closest thing to Scottie Pippen in the NBA right now is LeBron James. And LeBron James, good, unless he screws up, should retire. He's the greatest player ever. He has that potential in him. No, I just – because everything gets tossed out once you bring up the fact that not only was he handling the ball, not only was he acting like a point forward, he was doing it in the triangle, which – you have to see plays and movements, you know, 2-3 steps ahead. You have to anticipate stuff, you know, with the other free throw line, bringing the ball up, seeing who's moving, see, you know, how you're going to use the pressure of the opposing defense against them, and make them overcommit to something. And so, you know, not just sound like the get off my lawn guy, but no.
No, I think that's an awesome answer.
There's nothing like him.
I think that's the correct answer. No argument here.
A defensive point forward who is a playmaker on both ends of the court. I mean, that's insane.
With the versatility. You can't just stick him on a small forward every game. It's just ridiculous. And he was out of his element when he played, and he'd be out of his element right now. When he went to Houston in 99, you could see him in these games just looking at his teammates, these Hall of Fame teammates, and saying, move. There has to be movement. Everyone knows the ball is going to you on the left block. We need to counter that. We need to figure something out. You know, when he went to Portland, he's just, no, we can't just do now Steve gets a shot, now Rasheed gets a shot, now Damon gets a shot. No, there needs movement. There needs to be controlled chaos. And he was out of his element and ahead of his time back then. And, you know, even right now, he'd still be sitting mad at just about every one of his teammates because no one saw the game like him, not even Michael Jordan.
But it's nuts to think that, you know, and we need to probably move on in a second. You mentioned that Portland team. Like, do people realize how close that Portland team would have been to winning an NBA championship? I wonder how that would have changed kind of the storyline on Pippen. Like, that's crazy to me, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it probably would have. I think the storyline's changed. I think, like you said earlier, I think we're getting there with him and people's appreciation. But yeah, they had the best record in the NBA. You know, they were ahead of the Lakers until February, and they kind of fell apart down the stretch. Two bad games that they should have won in that last series. But yeah, that goes back to the Kukoc thing. I mean, he was not a one-on-one guy. He needed to thrive. You know, there needed to be an environment that was designed for him to succeed, and that needed smart, intelligent players moving around him instead of acting like one-on-one guys. I mean, he just didn't have that. And you know, you can dial in on one-on-one guys. Not that Steve Smith is out there trying to cross people over to, you know, like AI, but, you know, that Portland team was. It was unimaginative, and it was just, you know, okay, it's your turn now, it's your turn, and that was just an anathema to them.
Yeah.
Kelly, the nostalgia was awesome. Appreciate your time and insight, and hope you enjoy Scottie Pippen Week on Bloggable with the rest of us. I'm about to go and YouTube some Scottie Pippen highlights.
There's no better way to spend a sunny 72 and sunny day in late summer than sitting in front of your computer and listening to Q-Tip and you know, watching him just make Charles Smith's life a living hell. It's a wonderful existence, and I encourage everyone to take some vitamin D so they don't have sun deficiency and go do it.
Make sure you check out all of his work, all of Kelly's work at Yahoo's Ball Don't Lie blog. Give him a follow on Twitter at KD on Hoops. Kelly, thanks for your time.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
For our guest Kelly, for Mitch, I'm Nils. See you next time on The Bull Show.